I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, author of How to Fight Presidents, and guy who is at this moment kind of rattled, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, take over.
Hey, everybody, I'm Soren Bowie. I'm sure Daniel wants me to ask about why he's rattled, but I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to tell you about me, the inventor of burrito glue. Thank you, Burrito Glue, for sponsoring this podcast. We've all felt that anxiety of loading up your innards of a burrito and trying to calibrate for size and elasticity of your tortilla, but no matter how good your fold or your tuck or your roll is, the sad truth is not every burrito keeps its guts. Everything from moisture factor to the hardening of the tortilla as it cools, etc., I bet, they can all ruin your meal. Loosing all that loose meat you worked so hard to carefully pack. Well, no more. With my patented, odorless, tasteless formula, TBD, you apply a thin layer from this easy-to-use needle nozzle, and the tortilla activates the edible stickiness, securing the butt of your burrito for hours and even days, probably. Don't live in fear. Burrito glue. Get yourself a slather. Only at Ace Hardware.
Thanks to Shopify for supporting Quick Question. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like myself the resources once reserved for big business. For a free 14-day trial and full access to Shopify's entire suite of features, go to shopify.com/QQ. So this question doesn't need to be insulting, but it might be. Mm-hmm. Did you write that down?
I mean, I had like a couple of sentences that I wanted to get to. Like the connective tissue wasn't there.
Okay.
Is that all right?
I guess, yeah. If it wasn't written down at all, then it's very impressive. If you wrote it down, because like you were,
there's individual
you
sentences.
Were struggling, I think.
I was struggling?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, I mean, I said at one point, but I got butt wrong. Stumbled over that. That was an actual written down sentence.
Yeah. And I think you threw in, I can only assume would be the female version of burrito. You threw in a burrito at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to be inclusive.
Sure.
Did you know that I invent things sometimes, Dan, in my brain?
No, I did. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. Famously, I invented the electric toothbrush and then
yes.
The idea was,
oh, that's right.
From
that's right.
But I invent other things all the time in my head, and I haven't made any of them yet.
Burrito glue, forgive me. Mm-hmm. Is there a functional difference between burrito glue and, say, cheese, for example, like a well-melted cheese mm-hmm. in a burrito that secures all of the flaps and folds?
Yeah, I mean, cheese doesn't really do that. The back of your burrito, the cheese is first of all, cheese is more of like an oil. It's the opposite of a glue. It's slick. And this is a glue so that when you fold up, you know, regardless of how good you are at folding a burrito, mm-hmm. there's always like the back, you put it down even and it just like unravels. It opens right up. You can't pin it. And the first thing I invented was a pin, but that was a big, just in like the R&D portion of it, there was a lot of problems with people eating the pin.
Yeah, of course.
So what I've done instead is created a burrito glue that allows you to glue up the back of your burrito and ensure that that burrito is not going to open up in the back.
Hey, I want to tell you something. I love it. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you. I have another one that's coming out pretty soon that's a
coming out pretty soon. Yeah. Oh, I did have one other question about burrito glue. You said you invented it, and then immediately after you said you invented it, you said thanks to our sponsor.
Yeah,
burrito I'm sponsoring glue. This as if it, okay, all right. So I'm trying
to get the
you
word
are
out.
Thinking. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm also, in addition to the creator, I'm also the advertiser. I've done some PR so far, but I've found it sort of difficult to get the word out without a lot of money. And a lot of money obviously went into the making of burrito glue. So what I'm doing is like a more of a grassroots operation. And I know a guy who has a podcast called Quick Question. And I just had him do it for free.
Sure. Okay. So what's your other invention?
Ice cream sandwich netting.
Oh, this is
most of my stuff's about the structural integrity of food.
Yeah. So walk me through it.
Okay. It's like a scaffolding for your ice cream sandwich. It's just a, I found the biggest problem with an ice cream sandwich is that as you bite into it, there's too much structural integrity to the cookie and not enough to the ice cream. And it's like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because the ice cream is making the cookie colder and harder. And then as soon as you bite down, also the ice cream is getting warmer. And so as soon as you bite down, it's all squishing out, squishing out the sides. And I don't like that. And so this is essentially I don't want to say metal, but it's going to have a similar texture, scaffolding it's like a screen, a chicken wire, if you will, that goes around the outside of your ice cream sandwich that just sort of keeps it all in one spot.
One thing I've always wondered about ice cream, and I'm not of this world, so I know I'm talking out of my ass here, is I don't know why we've ever tried to improve upon the bowl. Cones are bad. Sandwiches are bad. Waffle sandwiches are bad. It's all bad. Just stick with the bowl. The bowl is fine. It's a perfect way to dispense ice cream and toppings.
For the most part, I agree with you, but I do appreciate the endeavor that somebody went out on a limb was like, I don't like having the bowl to deal with after I'm done. Like say I'm walking around a state fair and I want to eat my ice cream. I'm walking on the boardwalk.
Garbages abound in both of those scenarios.
Yeah. They're all, this one's all full up with hot dogs and stuff though.
I see.
This
one,
the funnel cake, it's untenable. There's just paper plates everywhere from funnel cake.
Sure.
And so I don't want that bowl at the end. And I'm kind of like looking for a trash while I'm on this date. And I've got the spoon that I'm also responsible for. And I have to kind of keep it pinned inside the cup with one finger, but also like the lip of the cup is also a little sticky. What I want is, and bear with me, a cone, right? A cone that I can very panically try to eat this ice cream as quickly as possible before it dissolves the cone and like freak out for about 10 minutes, try and like wolf down this entire thing of coarse custard before it absolutely devastates my hand.
I understand not wanting to be responsible for a bowl and spoon, but you know what I love about bowl and spoon is when I'm done, I don't have to wash my hands. And I do if I'm doing an ice cream sandwich or a cone or any other non-bowl situation.
Well, I'm with you as far as ice cream sandwich is concerned. I think that it was a ludicrous concept. We shouldn't have tried it. For the joy of having a cookie with ice cream is that the cookie is warm. It sits under the ice cream. It's a little surprise that you get to. And it's that combination of hot and warm, like a brownie sundae or something like that. You want that warm with the cold. And to freeze a cookie over the ice cream is, we have stories about people flying too close to the sun and what an issue that is. Yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, we have the main one.
Well, there's one.
Yeah.
There's one to be sure.
Amelia Earhart.
The Challenger.
Yeah. Yeah.
How's it going, Dan?
It's okay. I mentioned being rattled. 20 minutes before we started recording, I was walking in a neighboring town. There's a town that's 0.6 miles away from where I live. And sometimes I go there to work from a coffee shop. And I was walking back from there to make this recording. And a guy started talking to me on the walk. And he said, "What do you do in a postmodern society?"
Oh, no.
And I took my headphones out.
What's your frequency, Kenneth, moment?
Yeah. And I said, "What?" And he said, "In a postmodern society, what do you do in postmodernity? What do you do? What do you do with your life?" And I said, "I don't think I understand the question." And he said, "I don't either. It's a crazy question. That's why I bring it up. What are we supposed to do? And in somewhat of a panic move, I pointed at the sun, because that's generally how I respond to most things like this. It's just like, the sun is out and I have air in my lungs, so I don't know what I could complain about. But I didn't say those things. I just pointed at the sun. And he says, exactly. You point at the sun. In postmodernity, when you get questions that aren't real questions, you just point at the sun. We've been pointing at the sun our entire lives. And I said, I guess so. And then he got into his car. And he said, at least I have my Subaru. My parents got it for me, but they're kind of assholes. But at least I got it and it runs. And I said, okay. And then I left and then he left.
I have a couple of questions about this.
Yeah, go ahead.
What were his shoes like?
I didn't look at his shoes. But what? I bring up the fact that he got into his car because I know this the framework of this story makes it seem like maybe he was an unwell homeless person. Yeah, who was just like shouting at anyone who will listen. But he was, when I saw him, like dressed in a shirt with buttons that tucked into his pants that had a belt. I didn't look at his shoes. And we walked down the street to his car, a Subaru. So I was like, this isn't like a random crazy person who was just like accosting strangers. He had somewhere to be and a way to get there.
The other hurdle I'm trying to negotiate in the story is that his parents got up in a Subaru. How old is this guy?
20s, late 20s. Not a kid. No. Not a kid, no. For sure. And not an old man. Yeah. Cha-ching. I love that sound. It makes me smile. That's the sound of another sale on Shopify. Cha-ching! Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. It instantly lets you accept all major payment methods, which is huge. Shopify is more than a store. You can connect with your customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. Discover your possible. Shopify unlocks the opportunity of your business to more people every day. Every 28 seconds, an entrepreneur like you makes their first sale on Shopify. Supercharge your knowledge, your sales, and your success. For a free 14-day trial, go to shopify.com/QQ, all lowercase. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving you the resources once reserved for big business, customized for you with a great-looking online store that brings your idea to life and tools to manage and drive sales. Making your idea real opens endless possibilities. Believe me, this podcast started as a dream in Soren's eye, a simple dream that he cried out and I snuffed it out. I was like, we're never, get your head out of the clouds, Soren Bowie. You get your head out of the clouds. You got a nice looking head, but you spend it all the time in the clouds. Get it out of there. Bring it down to earth. And now look at us. We are successful entrepreneurs with a podcast and our heads wherever we want them to be. I love how Shopify makes it easy for anyone to successfully run their own business like Soren and I. Shopify powers millions of entrepreneurs from first sale to full scale. Plus, with 24/7 support, you're never alone. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is a possibility powered by Shopify. Go to shopify.com/QQ, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/QQ right now. Get your head out of the clouds and get them on Shopify.
And did he catch up to you? Like, did he jog up to you?
No, I was just walking. We were walking at the same clip on the same sidewalk.
And so when he got into his car and drove up, did he just like drive into the side of a building and the car blew up?
No.
Okay. How bizarre. I'm really curious about his shoes. I need that detail because the reason I need it is that that's how I can always tell what I'm dealing with.
Okay.
In a person. If they are wearing, I could tell somebody's a crazy person or not by their shoes.
All right.
If they're wearing shoes that are completely beyond, like, they should not be wearing them anymore.
Yeah.
They're like scuffed up and the bottom looks like the tread is kind of like flapping in some
right
point.
It's just like a leather bag that's wrapped around with a rope.
Yeah, it's, yeah. And it's not always an indication of somebody who's houseless. It's sometimes it's just like the crazy people also don't take care of their shoes. It's just like, it's never a priority.
Yeah.
But you can also tell if like somebody like that is dressed normally, but then they also have on like a pair of alligator skin boots or whatever. You're like, oh, this is the other side of crazy.
Yeah.
I have somebody else that I'm dealing with. But like, it's a really good indicator for crazy always is the shoes.
Yeah.
And I need to know if this guy's just like walking around in Adidas, I'm going to be like, well, fuck, I don't know what this is anymore.
Yeah. I guess I'll keep an eye out for shoes next time. I thought he was certainly, if he had like noticeably bad shoes, it would be a surprise based on how well kept he was otherwise.
Yeah. Postmodern society.
Yeah.
I think I hate this guy.
I think I do too, because like that's a bad question. Right?
No, bad first impression.
It's not just about a stranger accosting another stranger. That's a stingy question. There's nothing generous about that question because we don't have the same definitions of post-modernity, I don't think.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't know if I have one. Yeah, right. Okay. So when he just says like, what do you do in post-modernity times?
He pointed at the sun.
Yeah, look at the sun. Look how nice it is. What are you talking about?
And he was like, please point at the sun. Please point at the sun.
I know.
Yes.
Exactly. No,
I got an answer for that.
Yeah. And if I wasn't going to this recording, and maybe I had more time, I would like to have stopped down a little bit for that and been like, have we been pointing at the sun for eternity? Like, look, buddy. I got a minute. Let's sit and really unpack this. What are you talking about?
Shit, you are. Was he bearded?
No.
Well, it's just nothing is adding up here.
Yeah.
For me, I'm really trying to picture this guy and it's just not going great in my brain. So let's see. This is his icebreaker, but there's also a moment that we just sort of glossed over, which is that he said it and then had to wait for you to take out headphones to say it again, which there's a lot of opportunities to back out.
Yes.
To be like, this isn't, I don't know why I said that. Or like, let me walk that back. Hey, I think you look like a fun guy. We're the only two people in this town who are under the age of 65. Do you want to be buddies?
Right.
Which I think are all valid things.
Yeah.
But he wasn't into that. He was just like, I'm going to ask him again. I'm going to wait till he gets his headphones on and ask him again.
I think like bizarrely, the strangest part of it for me was at least I've got my Subaru, where I was like, fuck me, is this an ad? What's happening? He didn't say car. He said, at least I've got my Subaru.
I think what you just experienced is what women probably experience 14 times a day, which is like some dude is just like, what's my angle here? Postmodernity. And and then he just goes up and just like gives it a shot, takes a swing on something weird that's going to make her stop for a second and be like, what? What?
Yeah.
And like, that's what he's banking on. And so I think that sort of like confusing trap is something that you probably was. And also he's like, by the way, did I mention I have a car?
Yeah. I think car. Is this car
something a woman would run into regularly?
Yeah.
I don't know though.
It's tough. Reference. When he says, my parents bought it for me, but they're assholes. I'm like, I've heard very little about your parents. They don't seem like the villains in this story to me so far.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I can trust your judgment on who and who isn't an asshole in the world, guy. That's crazy.
Yeah. So that's been my day.
Yeah, that's a wild day. Do you want me to tell you what I did today?
Yeah, please.
So my son's birthday is coming up and... I can start this with a quick question.
Oh, yeah. Labor Day, right?
Yes.
Right around there? Yeah.
Yes. So let me give you a quick question here. When you were a kid, how did you celebrate your birthdays? Let's say like ages 6 to 9. How did you celebrate birthdays?
It's tough. We were on so much fucking coke back then that I genuinely don't remember. I want to say, my 8th birthday, we can't talk about. Because we have a blood oath that was forged in the ashes of that Chuck E. Cheese. But the other ones, I think pizza and cake, probably. is what I'll say on the
record.
Like,
there's an activity. There's usually something else involved.
Pinata was huge. Like getting a pinata for a birthday was like, everyone strap in. We're going to play musical chairs. And we're all going to like play pin the tail on a donkey. And we're mostly biding our time until we get to the pinata. The pinata was the centerpiece for everything.
Yeah. Hugely reckless entertainment for children.
Lots of candy and it's violent. And there was, this is a change that happened in my lifetime. We went from pinatas where you hit it with a bat and the candy pulls out to, I remember a pinata when I was a kid where it was like a giant circle with several strings coming down at the bottom. And every kid grabs a string and you just pull it.
Oh.
There's no honor in it. There's no violence in it. It's you all pull it. Everybody wins. Everyone gets candy. And I don't care for it.
That seems, I mean, the thrill is gone, but that seems like a far safer option. The idea of a pinata is head first crazy, in my opinion, because you have like, here's a circle. There's going to be a kid in there with a steel bat and he's going to be blindfolded. And no one is allowed the circle. But
steel?
What? A steel bat.
Steel?
Yeah, steel bat. Or, okay, let's be generous. Let's say like
not aluminum, not wooden.
The wood end of a mop.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't even know what bats are made of. You're probably right. It's aluminum. But somebody has it's like a force of destruction.
Yeah.
He's going to be blindfolded in that circle. And listen, none of you other kids are allowed in the circle, but there is going to be candy in that circle.
Yeah.
Don't go in it, but there is going to be candy there.
Right.
And when the candy hits, you should also go in. Like there's so many, the rules are so confusing.
It's nuts.
Like,
we're going to blindfold and arm a kid. And we're also not going to tell him when the thing is done. He's going to have to just like guess based on screams if he should stop swinging or not.
We're also going to spin him around so he's disoriented. Kid doesn't know where he's going with the bat. And it's his job to swing it as hard as he can. And people are going to try and trick him. Like if he swings in one area and misses anything, it's probably because they moved the pinata. They just moved it up in the tree. So swing in that spot again. It's tough, but I'm not doing a pinata.
Did we get a pinata for your 30th birthday?
We did. Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Awesome.
It was so much fun. So this is not a story of a pinata, but this is, my birthdays when I was young were, you would go to miniature golf or you would go bowling and you go to Pizza Hut. And that was like every kid's birthday for a decade.
Yeah.
It was like, that was the deal. And birthdays are understandably different now. Pizza Huts don't really exist in that capacity anymore, but I've noticed that in LA, like the birthday scene, and maybe it's just here and maybe it's everywhere. It's like you get a bouncy house, no matter what, wherever you go. If you like have it in a park, you rent out a portion of the park and then you get a bouncy castle. And a birthday that doesn't have a bouncy castle, all the kids are like, where's the bouncy cat? What the fuck?
Man.
I
don't think I ever had a bouncy castle for a birthday.
I didn't know. I don't think they existed until like 10 years ago. So we didn't have bouncy castles, but like a bouncy castle is just a staple of birthdays now. So I'm planning my son's birthday. I ran out of park. I know the space. I even went and scouted it. I went
Good Lord.
At this area where I was like, this will be where we set up the cake and everything. This will be where there's plenty of spots here, space here for a bouncy castle. I've already got my company in mind. Because bouncy castle companies are, it's a lawless world over there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reviews where they're like, it's one guy and he's got a bunch of them stored somewhere. And he just goes and gets one, brings it in a truck and sets it up. And the reviews are like, hey, never came. And other people are like, it was on the 4th of July. It was supposed to be a big deal. We had this bouncy castle that was coming. He said he was stuck in traffic. We waited another 3 hours. And then he said, couldn't make it after all. I'm sick. And so like, it gets really bad, really fast. You got to find the legitimate businesses. I found one that I was like, yes, they even had, my son's theme is a Star Wars party, which I think he does it just to hurt me.
That's gotta be tough for you. Yeah.
And he wants to do Star Wars. There's a Star Wars bouncy castle that rules. I found this one that's like just a little bit bigger than the parks generally allow. They want 15 by 15 feet. And there's one that's 19 by 21. And I'm like, nobody's going to come measure. This thing rules. It's got a slide in it. It's got inside there are these big rounded pads that stick up that the kids can bounce around in between.
Uh-huh.
It's got all kinds of, it's got everything you could want. And I was like, this is the one I'm getting. So I called them and they're like, okay, where is the party? are you, I first like in the date, they're like, we're available. Where's the party? And I was like, it's here in this park in Culver City. And they're like, oh, Culver City. No, we don't do Culver City. And I was like, okay, why not? And they're like, they said that it was because Culver City has changed their rules so that any vendor has to have an insurance. Obviously, most vendors will have insurance that come to like a public space like that. But the vendors have to have insurance that gives them a $3 million per occurrence, whatever it's called, not deductible, but the other thing. They will get $3 million per occurrence if there's something that happens. And that's completely exorbitant and out of the question for any vendor. Yeah. And so I found it, first I found out it was just bouncy houses. And I was like, well, fuck, I won't do a bouncy house. I'll do like, we'll have these people come that someone comes dressed as Obi-Wan, teaches your kids how to use the Force, and they make lightsabers and like that kind of cool stuff.
Yeah.
No, same thing. They can't, you have to have them, they'd be insured for over $3 million.
This is
and $6 million per year.
Do you think Culver City is either trying to price people out of this to keep it exclusive, or if they just want no vendors whatsoever?
It sounds like they want no vendors whatsoever. Yeah, like I think that
their end game is we don't want events in our area.
Yes. Yeah. I think that this is actually like a shots fired on bouncy castles particularly, and then everything else just fell in with it. But bouncy, because like you can't just say bouncy castles, because it seems there's all kinds of other really dangerous stuff you could be doing that they're also not allowed. So the bouncy castles are like a problem in parks, I guess, in that they take up space. They're loud because they always have a generator. The kids go crazy around them. Like they go nuts.
Yeah.
And maybe it just feels like a big liability to parks, or it feels like an eyesore. I don't know what it is, but they're like, the government of Culver City is like, no more. We're not allowing it. You'd have to have, it's like setting a bail at $10 million, basically. It's like, no, that's it's just designed to keep people from paying it. So as I was looking into it, I was like calling these different vendors. And I'm like, is there a single vendor who can do this? And they're like, no. And I was like, okay, well, what if I got my own insurance for the day? What if I got just insurance for one day? How much would that cost? And they were like, about $26,000.
Good God.
All right. Well, that's a little more than I was looking to spend.
Yeah. You have to wonder like how much is your son's love worth? And it's not 26,000. Don't feel bad about that. It's okay if the answer is no, not 26,000.
So really the only answer, and so I even called other people because I'd been to other birthdays this year where they had bouncy castles. And I was like, hey, what's the deal? How did Evan hook that up? And his parents were like, oh, they just changed the rule. We're trying to have a birthday for our younger son and he can't get it. So like it was around, I guess they changed it in January, but they didn't really inform any of the parks until about May. And then when everyone who works for Parks and Rec found out, they're like, okay, this is the new rule. And since May or June or whatever, there has not been a bouncy castle in all of Culver City. And so now I'm like frantically trying to figure out what to do because I've already rented this park out. And I'm like, I think I just have to maybe eat that money and then get a park in Los Angeles or Mar Vista or somewhere else that's not outside of city limits and just go there. But I just don't understand why. I'm trying to like get in their headspace of like, what a crazy rule to instate and ensure that like no one has fun at your parks anymore.
Right.
I guess they just don't want birthdays. I don't know.
I don't want to rub salt or anything like that, but my town, my beach town here in New Jersey, now that we're like deep, deep, deep into summer, every weekend is a different bullshit festival to celebrate nothing. Like it's legitimately every single Saturday is one or two different festivals. And this past Saturday I'm not going to say what the festival was because I don't want to give away where I live, but the short version of it is I'm trying to remember exactly, I think 4 different bouncy castles in like our town square.
Oh my God.
There was like slides. There was like a one where you like climb and do like obstacle stuff, like American Ninja Warrior bouncy castle. And there was one that was just for like play golf in a bouncy environment. And then like a couple of your standard bouncy castles. It was great. It was a free for all.
That's, you know what? You're reminding me that this is going to be really interesting come Halloween when all the pumpkin patches set up, because that's the bread and butter of a pumpkin patch. It's not the pumpkins.
No,
it's like the soup plantation. You don't go to the soup plantation for the soup.
No, so absolutely not.
Get some pizza and some pasta. But you go to Mr. Bones or Dr. Bones. I think he's a doctor now.
The guy from Star Trek?
I think he finally finished his medical degree. No, he's a skeleton.
Oh, okay. I see.
Dr. Bone's pumpkin patch. Mm-hmm. And they, yeah, the bread and butter of that place is like, you got all these cool giant inflatable slides. And I can't imagine they could do that anymore. I wonder what's going to happen this year. I think it all dies. So the long story short is that as I was talking to different vendors about this, because they're all complaining about it too, because some of them are based in Culver City and they're like, we can't even work in our own city. And what they were saying was that they think it's, sorry, hang on a second. Mm-hmm. Let me get this right. The fuck was I about to say? Hold on. I started typing in like this search and I was like, wait a second, what am I looking for? Hang on. No, it's gone. Maybe I'll think of it later.
I do. There's something very dark and funny to me about cities gentrifying themselves so much that no one can live there anymore. It's not, you're not even like kicking out a community or a group of people. It's just like Culver City. They want to be so nice that no one can afford to live there or have any fun there. It's just going to be a snow globe of a place that just exists and looks nice that you can drive past and that's it. Don't take your shoes off when you're in Culver City. Don't touch the trees. Don't touch anything. Just look at it and then be on your way.
Yeah. What? Come to our city. Come to our city. Yeah. Don't fucking stop.
Yeah.
Go. Don't get out of your cars. You'll ruin it. Anyway, I don't know if this will break his heart or not. I don't even know what we're going to do. I think we'll just move to a different park and we'll still do a giant bouncy castle. And then all the kids won't get there and say, where's the bouncy castle? No. I think that's got to be the most humiliating thing for him, is if they all get there and like, where's the thing that we all get?
Yeah, I feel like I would remember that as a kid if every birthday party had a bouncy castle and then I went to the one that didn't. That would stick in my brain forever.
It's the 6-year-old version of a dry wedding.
Yeah, 100%.
You get there and you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Do you know how long I spent in the toy aisle of Target for you to come here?
Did you have any, now that we're talking about it, did you have any, it was mostly golfing and bowling for your birthdays. Did you do anything that in retrospect maybe was kind of weird? We had, there was... I don't know if this was a national trend or a New Jersey trend, but one year for birthday parties, we got super into pottery painting. I went to like 3 birthday parties. One of them was mine, where it was like, we're gonna rent out this pottery place next to the hobby shop, and we're all going to paint ceramics, and that's going to be our birthday party.
I think Ronan would love the shit out of that.
Like one of them, I painted a ceramic bank that I could put the money that I didn't have could go in there. And I painted a dog and like, it was super fun. And I'm looking back on it and I'm like, hey, why did I do that? Why did we want to do that? Where did that come from? Why were we all super briefly laser focused on painting ceramics for a year?
There are, so at a lot of birthdays that I attend now, there is the option to, they have like little bird houses, wooden bird houses, and a lot of paint, or they've got just like little things, not snowmen, but something like a little alien or something like that, that you can also paint. Like it's a big deal that at these parties, there's also like a craft section where, the kids that want to just sit down and make something, like they can paint something. And I think that, and my son loves that. As soon as my son gets to a party, he won't play with any kids if those are there because he wants to do 6 birdhouses.
Yeah.
And I feel like he would love a pottery painting option for his birthday. The only reason he's doing a bouncy castle is because he thinks that's the way it's supposed to go. I'm going to ask him. I'll see if that's something he wants.
Yeah, get some Star Wars pottery.
So we used to... on birthdays, it was also a big deal. Everybody had trampolines also when I was in my hometown. And so it was a big deal for everybody it was a sleepover birthday and you would all sleep on the trampoline together. That was going to be like the night. Yeah. So we do like the pizza, we do whatever we did. And then afterwards we'd all just play on the trampoline until we were too tired to play anymore, and then we'd fall asleep. And it's cold in Colorado. So even in the summers at night, it's getting down to the low 50s, sometimes in the 40s. And some kids don't have great sleeping bags. They have like the square one that has like, it doesn't have a hood on it or anything. It's just square with some fleece in it or whatever. And those kids really suffered. But you'd show up with like a giant synthetic thermal bag, and you'd all play on the trampoline for a very long time, sometimes with water guns even. And then at the end, you'd all just pass out and go to sleep and wake up at 6 a.m. because it was, you frost on your sleeping bag.
Yeah. There's something really wonderful about like, hey, we're going to play on this thing. And then when you're tired, you sleep on the thing that you play with. And in the morning, you eat the thing that you slept on. Like it, it feels very old school.
Yeah. And then I also had a friend who lived up there. That valley, you know where I got married, that little tiny valley. Yeah. So he lived up that way, and there's a natural hot springs up there. And so every single birthday, the plan was we would go to his house, we'd watch a movie, and then we would all at in the middle, like 9 o'clock at night, we'd walk up to the hot springs and set it up. And what that means is that it's hot springs coming out of the river. So it's partially in the river and partially not. And you have to basically build a rock wall to get the temperature exactly right. Otherwise, just blasting boiling hot water up into one spot, and then there's ice cold river water because it's just like snow melt coming down from the rivers, and you have to really like get it right. And so we do this manual labor for 2.5 hours in the middle of the night, setting up the perfect little hot tub in the middle of the river so that we could all just sit there for a little bit and then go home.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a way more involved than any of my birthday parties.
Yeah, well, I mean, looking back on it, I'm like, why do we spend so much time on that? I don't think I ever remember spending that much time on anything when I was that age. And we were lifting heavy river stones and trying to find the right ones.
Yeah.
The last few days, my son hasn't been in camp. I've been like more focused on him getting his birthday all scheduled and put away.
Yeah.
Locked up. And in the meantime, I've also just had him because I'm not working the last couple of days and trying to figure out what to do with him. And I built him a rubber band gun. Did you ever build those when you were young?
Not build. I mean, we would shoot rubber bands with our fingers. There's a thing you could do where you can like wrap it around your hand enough times where your index finger is extended forward and your thumb is extended vertically. Yeah. And if you position the rubber band just right, if you lower your thumb, it releases the rubber band forward and shoots it out as one would shoot a bullet. So we would do that, but there was no building component to that.
Okay. I had remembered somehow in my childhood, this same friend who lived up in up in the middle of nowhere with the hot springs. He had these rubber band guns that I think he must have made with his dad. They're like more like rubber band rifles. You had to tie two rubber bands together to get them long enough to stretch the extent of this big thing. And I remember it just being like a wooden dowel, and then there was something on the end, and then there was a clothespin. And you'd have a notch in the front of it on the dowel. You'd stretch the rubber band all the way back to the clothespin, and then once it was in the clothespin, all you did is push on the clothespin, and it would shoot wherever you wanted it to go. And I loved it. And we would like, it was devastating. I mean, this thing would leave welts because you've got two rubber bands stretched together. And I was like, that's what I want for him. I want him to do some damage. And so I started looking up. I was like, surely people have designs for these online. And it's crazy. If you look online to try and find rubber band gun DIYs, there's a huge chasm between the absolute dog shit, which is like somebody has taken some popsicle sticks and scotch taped them together and been like, look at this gun, to people who have made something that's just impossible to make. You do not have the tools for it. Even as a woodworker, as a gentle woodworker, as I consider myself to be, I do not have the tools for this. It's like you got to like cut it out of plywood, or you've got to two pieces of wood. Then you're going to end up gluing them together and you're going to put a trigger in the middle of it and stuff.
Yeah, it's, man, I just Googling this quickly and looking at images. There are some of these guns. First of all, I'm not seeing like a child's hand at all. This is an adult man's hand holding this thing that looks exactly like a real gun, but it chews rubber bands. And I'm like, man, you're scratching a different itch. This is you want to cosplay as having a Glock and shooting it at things. And I don't understand why you want to do that, but.
Yeah, there's people are making semi-automatic ones where you have like put multiple rubber bands on it and you just and I was like, I can't make any of this stuff. So looking through this with him thinking I will find the one here and it won't matter. And then as soon as he starts seeing these, he's like, that one. I'm like, no, I shouldn't have done this in front of you. We're not doing any of these. Daddy can't do those. Daddy's not on Etsy selling these. This is out of our reach. And so I just built it based on memory. And Dan, the thing I built rules. It's so cool. I put more consideration into the feel and handle of this gun than I did of like an outdoor patio bench that I made.
Right.
It's got a square dowel at the top of it. That's about a foot and a half. And I put a groove in the front with a miter saw. I mean, not a miter saw, with a, God damn it.
Come on, get the right saw or you're going to lose the audience.
With a Dremel drill. So I put a groove that you like, and then because a dowel is so thin, I didn't want to just have like his fingers in the way of the rubber band or him getting hit. So I put a bottom on it. The same way you would have like on a shotgun, that pump action, that thing that you're holding on to. That's what I've got on essentially the bottom of this gun. It's another rounded dowel that's about the same size that I just cut in half and now sits like is first glued on, then screwed onto the bottom. And then in the back, I was like, I don't know how to build a handle. I could get a square piece of wood or like a rectangle piece of wood, cut it down, and then just sand the shit out of it to make a handle, make it rounded. And instead, what we did is I took him to Home Depot. We looked around and I got to this section where there were just some horsehair brushes. And I was like, a brush handle. Yes, of course. Just cut off a brush handle and screwed it onto the back. Got the cut it at an angle so that there's nothing in the back. It angles up like the back of a gun.
Yeah.
And then put on the paperclip and not paperclip, the clothespin. And this thing fucking shoots like it you could shoot a fly from 20 yards away with this thing. It's so accurate.
How easy is it to load?
Terribly hard. Terribly difficult. I'm glad you asked. As soon as it was done, we were both like, yes. Like even my son was like, yeah, this thing is cool. And then I went to load it and I was like, oh, he's never going to be able to do this. So we now have gone out and bought new rubber bands, longer rubber bands that are a little bit easier and a little more, amenable, and he can finally load it, but it really takes some work. Like he's got to put it on the ground. It's like loading a musket. It takes about as long as that, where you're like, you're pinning it with your feet at the bottom. You're trying to get your face out of the way, but you're like stretching it all the way down.
Like gravity's got to do some work. Leverage has to do some work.
It's really difficult to load, but he's very excited about it and wants to show it to their kids on the block. And in some ways I'm happy that it is hard to load, because I know that as soon as he shows it to their kids in the block, they're going to be like, let me see it. Let me shoot you with it.
Yeah, of course.
That's what kids do. Yeah. And they're going to struggle to load it too. And I'm going to be like, oh, okay. There's plenty of time here for me to step in and be like, please don't shoot anyone in the face with this. But it does damage. It's really great. It's a wonderful gun. It's exactly what I wanted to make. And my wife hates it. So I did the right thing.
You know what's interesting and a little bit humbling? The stuff that you're describing that you're doing for your soon-to-be six-year-old son.
Seven.
Right? Seven. My own time. Mm-hmm. It's shockingly similar to stuff that my brothers and I did when we were between 15 and 20 years old. Like we didn't build rubber band guns, but we went to Home Depot and made ourselves lightsabers. It was very similar to you making like Star Wars stuff for your son, except we should have been out like meeting girls and having parties and doing things. But we bought, there were two components to our lightsabers. One was like, we got metal and odds and ends to build like what the hilt would look like a non-functioning, obviously, lightsaber hilt. And we designed them ourselves and they had like heft to them. And then we also built long wooden dowels that we would, the base we would paint to look like the hilt. And then we would wrap the rest of it with tape to be the color of the blade. and we would spar with our wooden lightsaber dowels for
that
nothing.
Rules.
It was for absolutely nothing. At one point, we talked about, like, maybe we'll make a little Star Wars movie in the backyard, but we didn't. We mostly just, like, fought with wooden swords and like, not even, like, Fight Club-style fighting where we're just brawling. We would choreograph minute-long sequences and practice them and rehearse them for no one, for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. We would do similar things. It was the trampoline karate for us, whereas, like, on a trampoline, we came up with, like, this is like a good fight sequence on a trampoline. Like, this is solid, and we've got it dialed in. And if anyone was to ever attack us on a trampoline, they would be in some serious trouble.
Yeah.
They'd be in a world of hurt.
Have there been a lot of fights in movies on trampolines?
None.
I don't think I've seen any. Yeah. That would be a really fun sequence.
Yeah, this was our Equilibrium, but instead of guns, it was trampoline. No, not Equilibrium. What is it? Gunkata? Is that from Equilibrium? Yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so my son and the other kids on the street are very excited about weapons. They're at like an age where weapons are very cool to them. And they started designing their own weapons maybe last year, where every once in a while I'd go outside and they'd all taken newspapers or whatever and just duct tape the newspapers into a club, like rolled it up enough that you could then put 4 pounds of duct tape on it. And it was heavy enough that it felt like a club. And we were all kind of charmed by it. The parents, we were like, okay, they're making these things. They're not using it on each other. They're hitting palm trees and stuff. They can't do much damage. This is fine. And then you could just see the arms race happen. You can watch them suddenly be like, what if I put a rock in the middle of it? And they're like, this is way heavier now. And then other ones that were like, they get a piece of wood and they'd realize that if they just scratched it on the sidewalk enough on the edge, they could get that wood pretty sharp. So it's just like splintering sharp wooden axes that suddenly they had. And we were like, oh, okay. maybe we should have encouraged this. But then I did. I built myself a rubber band gun. And so here we are. The arms race continues. They're going to all want one too. I just know it.
You're going to have to build a lot of rubber band guns, I think, is where this story inevitably goes.
I know. And then they're all going to need glasses or eye patches. I don't know which.
That's cool. I somewhat famously wore an eye patch in school, and it's fine.
It doesn't sound fine if it was somewhat famous. All right. Well, we could be done.
Yeah, great.
You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Daniel at DOB_Inc. Or you can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. Isn't that a cute little thing we do? That's something we did at Cracked. Brockway has a similar one. Michael Swaim has a similar one. We didn't know Twitter was going to last this long. No. We were just fucking around. You can also follow us at QQ_Soren and Dan on Twitter. We have an email, QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. We have a sound engineer, producer, editor. He does it all. His name is Gabe Harder. We have a Patreon/quick question. And our theme song is by Me Rex. And you can find Me Rex's music at merex.bandcamp.com. Bye-bye.
What's your favorite? How did you get? I think you'll have a great time here.